everyone, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take usually two movies with the same plot and premise and watch and discuss them.
And in this Halloween slash Christmas episode, because this is a horror Christmas movie, we watched three movies.
Yes, we watched Black Christmas, Black Christmas, and Black Christmas.
The first Black Christmas came out in 1974, the second one 2006, and the third one came out in 2019.
Yeah.
I want to start off with thanking everybody who's listened to our podcast this year, and if you enjoy our podcast, please share it with a friend, because our growth statistics this year have been fantastic. And we will keep making this podcast while you keep listening. And I want to thank you all personally. You, listening right now, thank you.
And a shout out to our listeners in the Netherlands.
Yeah, shout out to the Netherlands.
Which was
number five.
An unexpected number five on our top listen locations this year.
Who? Because it was New Zealand, Ireland, America.
UK.
UK.
And the Netherlands.
You can do it. The Netherlands was because America was third, right?
Yeah. I think the USA is just the biggest podcast audience generally. New Zealand and Ireland make sense because that's where we know a lot of people.
So we always tell people about it, even if they don't want to know. Hold them down and subscribe.
And also then the UK, I guess, just English speaking country, and we're an English speaking podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was surprised to see the Netherlands, number five, most listeners. So thanks to whoever's listening to us in the Netherlands.
Yep.
Keep sharing it with all your friends. I was going to say, if we do, we'll go on tour to the Netherlands. We can't afford to go on tour to anywhere. We can't afford to do any live shows. That's not where we're at in our podcast journey. But we appreciate you.
Rightio, let's talk about the movies.
Yeah.
I want to start off in a weird format, which is asking you some questions.
Oh, yeah. Let's go. It's interview time.
Interview time, Lisa. Had you seen any of these movies before?
Nope.
I had not ever seen either of these movies before. Which one did you enjoy the most? 74, 06, 19.
God, I don't know. I enjoyed them all for entirely different reasons, I feel like. So that's, like, the 74 one is, like, proper camp 70s B-horror movie.
Classic,
so,
yeah.
Like, it's not a great movie, I wouldn't say, but it's fun to watch from that perspective. We watch a lot of B-grade action movies. It's fun to watch some B-grade horror movies from that time, because there was a lot of horror in that period. The 2006 one was mostly, like, so many people in it who have become big names.
Yeah.
Some of which were, like, in their fame already at that point. But, like, interesting to just be like, oh, and this person's in it, and this person's in it.
Yeah, it was very weird.
And then, the 2019 one was just very schlocky, predictable. It was, like, over the top, but in a funny way. I don't know if they meant it to be a comedy, but I enjoyed it as one.
Fair enough. Yeah, so
I will say I was surprised to learn that the 2019 one was actually written by two women, because it felt like a man trying to write what he thought feminism was.
Yes. It was definitely a message in the 2019 one that sort of got weirdly blurred when it became supernatural, and I was like, oh, you've ruined this movie.
I will
your
say,
own movie.
So here's something, I don't think I even wrote this down in the trivia, but I read it when I was like looking at trivia. The 2019 one came out, I think they already had the rights to a remake of it when this happened, but basically the head of the studio was being heavily criticized for not ever hiring a female director.
Right.
And he tried to claim of women can't direct horrors, or women don't direct horrors, no woman wants to direct a horror movie or whatever, and got so much backlash for it that he put women writers and a female director on this movie. So I think to some extent that's why the feminism message is pushed so hard in it.
Yeah.
Is because it was like this guy's retort to basically being called out and being a misogynist. But it's weird. But also I understand choosing Black Christmas as your film that you're going to remake with a heavy feminist lens, because in the original 1974 one of the characters is just casually talking about the fact that she has gotten pregnant, doesn't intend to keep the baby, and is going to have an abortion, and her partner's like, shouldn't we talk about this? And she's like, no, I've made a decision, it's my body, I'm going to do this thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's pretty progressive, I feel like, for 1974. Yeah. So I understand if you want to make your horror remake feminist, to be like, oh, let's take this one that already had this kind of little bit of feminist messaging in it in the 70s.
I will give you, the audience, a overview of what these movies are about.
Yeah.
They are set in a sorority house, and the victims are all sorority sisters, and it's a deranged male killer.
Yeah.
It's they all start off by getting phone calls from a creepy person who's making weird things, and the 74 one is like way more over the top.
It's also obviously like,
cell phones didn't exist.
Yeah, in the 74 one it's phone calls to the house, and it was one of like many movies in the 70s that were kind of made off this premise that was like a folk tale of the at the time of a babysitter who was getting creepy calls, and it was called coming from inside the house.
Yeah.
So there's like multiple movies in the 70s were about basically the same thing.
Which then they re-elevated the trope with like Scream and things.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, Scream was basically talking about these specific movies.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so it's phone calls from landlines, and it's that the house mother has a separate phone number, so a separate landline phone in her bedroom compared to the phones that are in the rest of the house. In the 2006 one, it's calls on mobile phones, and the calls are coming from the previous victim's phone, mobile phones.
That was the last one.
No, that was the 2006 one. The 2019 one, It's some app in unmentioned app, and they're getting messages.
Like Yip or something.
Yip Yip?
Yeah.
It's not a real.
Yip or something.
Yeah, it's some made up social media app, and they all get weird, creepy messages from a profile that was created that is named after the founder of the university, and the picture is like a bust of him.
Yeah.
Which is so weird.
The first one, the 74 one, is pretty straightforward. They get creepy calls, and then all the girls start getting killed off one at a time until you get the final girl. There are the same tropes in 74 and 06.
Yeah, 06 is
right. Of the... If you've seen Cabin in the Woods, you understand of what the archetypes of the characters in horror movies. You've got the jock, you've got the stoner, the fool, the virgin, the whore. Like, that's like the standard like tropes, and they're sort of like combine them into this, but having all female, which is fascinating because like in the 74 one, you get she was a future Lois Lane. Because
Margot Kidder.
Yeah, I don't know if she played it when... What movie? 74. When did she play Superman? Oh, yeah, so it was 4 years later she was playing Lois Lane.
Yeah.
Who plays the, like, absolute drunk.
Yeah.
She is constantly drinking. The house mother in the 74 one is hilarious because she is just... riddled the house with like
just booze everywhere,
and hidden. She's like, you know, they're all like, oh, go do something, and she's like, yeah, sure, and like rummages around her closet trying to look for booze.
Yeah,
that whole scene where she got half dressed and put makeup on one side was just absolutely bananas. They've done that again in 06 when you get the same sort of archetypes.
And also the house mother in the 06 one is played by one of the actresses who played one of the sorority girls in the 74 one, which was a nice little nod.
And then, the 2019 one, as you said, sort of had more of a feminist like, leans to it in a way where I feel like the writer and the director kind of went, this, I'm going to take this story, I'm going to make it about female empowerment and female, like, what the real horrors in real life are for women.
And then they turn to supernatural for no reason.
Yeah, and it just kind of ruins the entire premise of the movie. Let's talk about the killers, because it's not the band, the slasher murderers in this movie.
I like their first album, Hot Fuss.
Yeah. The first one is one of the boyfriends.
No, it's not.
Isn't it? I thought it was the guy from 2001 A Space Odyssey.
No! Did you miss the whole point of the movie?
Possibly.
It's Billy. It's the same, the murderer is okay. The same in the 74 one and the 06 one.
What?
But it's this guy, Billy. At the very beginning, he crawls into the attic space. And the end of the movie is that she has become convinced, even though she figured out the alibi for her boyfriend, he creeps her out and she gets scared by him and she kills him in self-defense, thinking he's the killer.
Right.
The police put her up in her bed and take away his body and the bodies of the girls that they found in their beds, and they're like, case solved. And then it pans up and the real killer is still in the attic with other two bodies that were never found. So it's left ambiguous that, like, the police are like, oh, well, at least it's all solved and, you know, we've got the guy who was murdering him and he's dead now, and they're leaving thinking case closed, and they're leaving her in the bed unconscious directly below the actual killer.
Because there's a lot of weirdness in that movie, and because we watched three of them in a row over three nights, they all kind of blended into one continuous globby mess in my brain.
The whole thing is that, like, you're kind of led to believe maybe it could be him the whole time. I've forgotten his name. I was gonna say Peter, that might be his name, I don't remember.
He wants to bombay the doors open hell, that's all I remember.
Yeah, Peter, it is Peter. So you're kind of thinking maybe it's Peter, maybe it's not Peter, and she has the revelation Peter was with her one of the times the calls came through.
Right.
So he couldn't have been making the calls.
The second movie really goes into Billy, who's like the previous owner of the house. He was kept in there. The mother's boyfriend murdered the husband. No. They both murdered the husband. He was locked in the attic.
And he witnessed his murder. He witnessed his father being murdered.
Yeah. And then has an incest baby with his mum.
Yeah.
And he's also yellow.
Yeah, he's jaundiced, I guess.
Yeah, but he's like, it reminds me of the Yellow Man from Sin City.
Yeah. Also.
And he escapes from a mental institution.
Yeah.
And
he's obsessed with Christmas, and he just wants to be in his house for Christmas.
Yeah.
And he shows love through killing because he saw his dad get killed, apparently. I don't know.
There are so many eyeball-eating moments.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird eyeball stuff.
Yeah, if you like eyeballs, in or out of people's heads, I recommend the 06 one.
Also, like, this is a big spoiler, but you probably don't care about these movies anyway. It's revealed towards the end of the 06 one that Billy's incest baby sister daughter is his accomplice, and they're doing the scream thing of there being two killers in the house, which is how she's killing people in the house while he hasn't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
But, like, we both saw that coming, but thought that it was going to be revealed that one of the sorority girls was actually the sister.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was like, oh no, there she is and she's dead. And then it was just like some weird, creepy lady who had never been seen before and then suddenly was running around, crawling around in the innards of the walls. But then in the big spoilers again, in the 2019 one, they did make one of the sorority girls an accomplice to the murders.
Yeah.
So they did what we thought they were going to do in the 2006 one.
The true victim of the true enemy of the feminist movement, the insiders who are working with the men. It's so weird because the bust of the original founder is kept as a ritual and he oozes black mind control goo.
Yeah, so he only here's the real it only happens because he's not publicly on display anymore.
Right.
So the bust of the founder was put publicly on display in the university, but he was a well-known misogynist. Secretly, he was also like in a master of the dark arts, apparently.
Of course.
And concerned that women were going to try and take over and needed to be put in their place. But anyway, the female students put together a petition to be like, hey, we don't want this misogynist bust around.
Slave owner in the north.
Yeah. Slave owner in the north, so, and racist and sexist and blah blah blah. So they win that, and then his bust just gets put into this like secret room in the frat house, and then because of that, it triggers this whole event where he releases his mind control goo because he had imbued the statue of himself with this power to be unleashed when women started to gain control. And then what it does is, well, they bring in new pledges to the frat house and they put the goo on them and they get super strength and become mind controlled versions possessed by his spirit to target women whose artifacts they've collected, including a diva cup.
Yeah.
Why? Anyway, so they're stealing. So they have an insider in the sorority house stealing items belonging to the girls that they can basically train these guys to go after them with their super strength zombie possessed mind goo.
It's pretty much the
and you can see how you get there from, you know, one of the original slashers that's just a guy in a house killing some ladies.
Yeah. It sort of like escalated. For every version, it sort of escalated of, like, how believable, you know, deranged person in your roof, that's fine.
Yeah, just a guy who climbed into this building and started killing people.
Yeah.
Versus...
brother, sister, incest, daughter, dad, eating eyeballs.
Escaping from a mental institution at Christmas so that he can go back to his childhood home and kill anyone who's in it.
Yeah.
Sure. And then mind control... anti-feminist goo.
Yeah.
And Cariola's.
Yeah.
He plays such great, ridiculously over-the-top villains. I asked you during watching this, had you seen Ella Enchanted? Because he kind of reminded me of his character in that. Because in that, I'm just like, this guy's in a different movie to everyone else.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, that's what was needed for the mind control goo guy, I guess.
Yeah.
That he plays like a professor who is passing down the knowledge of the mind control goo.
Yeah, problematic professor.
Yeah, problematic professor. And he's big mad because they want to get him kicked off the faculty, I guess, for being a misogynist.
Yeah.
Or get his curriculum changed because he only teaches old white men. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like a classics class.
Yeah. It also, the whole movie opens with, like, a weird quote about supernatural powers that I was like,
what? How's that related?
Yeah, I was like, what's this got to do with anything? And then you're like, oh, okay. yeah. So they all start with, like, a girl going missing. Or a girl who's supposed to be picked up by someone or whatever, or go meet someone, so everyone thinks she's gone, but then that person is like, hey, she never came to meet me. And that's kind of, like, the instigator.
The thing that annoyed me the most about this movie is, for the first time in three movies about the same thing,
yeah,
they actually try and contact the police.
Oh, yeah.
And there is a whole overarching... What do you mean
the first movie, they're in constant contact with the police? Yes,
that's what I'm saying.
Oh, like, yeah.
But I'm saying for the first time horror movies, someone actually contacts the police.
Yeah.
And now I understand, because all horror movies share the same universe. And this is why no one contacts the police, because the police in all three of these movies are useless.
Absolutely useless.
Like, the first time they're like, oh, they don't believe you. She's just, like, with somebody. Don't worry. Why are you wasting our precious police time?
And I will say that, like, in the original 1974 version, it's really just one incompetent policeman.
Yeah.
And then when they get, like, the higher-up detective on the case, and he's like, what are you doing, incompetent policeman? And then, like, he's actually pretty decent at looking into it.
Yeah. But that's after people have been killed.
Yes, that is after many people have been killed.
Oh, what? Women keep dying? Oh, I better, you know, do something about it. But it's
before any bodies are found.
Yeah.
So... it's just that multiple people have gone missing. Oh, yeah, and it's the calls. It's then they're getting the calls, and he's like, you're ignoring the fact that there's these calls happening when they're happening at the same house that this girl is missing from. You don't think that's, kind of connected? And the other guy's like, oh, I didn't think about that. And he's like, take it seriously.
Yeah, it is very much the trope of no one ever calls the police in the horror movies, and then this horror movie, they actually call the police.
In the third one... It's
only campus security. Campus,
yeah, and what's ridiculous is at one point, someone calls 911, and what 911 does is they call the campus
security.
Yeah, what the hell's that about? Also, like, here's a genuine question for our U.S. listeners: do colleges in America just have like hospitals and police things at them? Because, like...
But it wasn't in America. It was filmed in Otago. Oh, yeah,
that's true. That's true. The third one is filmed in the University of Otago in Dunedin, in New Zealand. And the first two are both in Canada.
Yeah.
Okay, so North America... Because I think the one that's filmed in Dunedin is still set in North America. Yeah. I don't know if it's supposed to be set in the United States or Canada. But, okay. United States and Canada. Listeners from those areas... Do your universities or your colleges have hospitals and police stations on them? Because the campus, I think he's campus police. I don't think he's campus security. I think he's an actual police officer in a police office on campus.
Right.
And also, I think it's the second one that they all go to the university hospital.
Right.
When they're in hospital, it's the university hospital. On campus.
Yeah, because why would you take...
Crazy to me.
Take victims away from an at-large killer by only moving them, like, a couple of hundred meters down the road. Yeah,
and I think when we did Happy Death Day, if my memory serves you correct, that was also a hospital on campus.
Yeah, but I think there was a medical university.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Because it's, like, a university around learning to being a doctor.
Yeah. I don't know, it was just weird. It's just weird to me that's a thing. They're
weird movies.
I know, but that's my question is, are these just weird movies being weird? Or do a lot of universities and colleges in the United States and Canada have hospitals and police on site? I want our listeners to let me know. Let me know in the comments on whatever platform you're on.
Get in the comments. Or
on our Discord. The link is in our description.
And on our website, it takes two.co.nz. Yes.
As a show notes if you're listening on a podcatcher.
Yeah. I don't even know where to go. It's such, like, all three of these movies are such a mess.
Yeah.
Because you have that, like, very promising young woman moment in the beginning of the movie where Imogen Poop's character was... sexually assaulted, and then the girls get together because the guy who sexually assaulted that no one believes did it, no one believes her, is like there, so they sing a song about like sexual assault, and then that's the reason they reckon they're getting targeted for the murder, even though like all this stuff was happening in the background and I think people had already been killed at that point.
Yeah, a couple of people had already... At least one person had already been killed. I think two people.
Yeah.
And then also, like, all of their items had been taken.
Yeah, previously.
And also, before they sang the song, she saw them putting the goo on
New
Pledge's head. So that stuff was already in the works.
The second one, 06.
Yeah.
The whole hive mind... Because there's multiple cuts to, like, his Billy's backstory.
Yeah.
And the weird, like, oh, you have to give you get a secret Santa and you have to give Billy a present.
That's so weird to me.
And it's like, oh, and it's so funny to me because, like, America, from where you're from, not obviously New Zealand is an outlier, but, like, Ireland is incredibly old, the UK's old, Europe is old. And it's like, oh my God, we've got this tradition about giving the guy who, like, was born in this house who was a murderer a present.
Yeah.
It was like 30 years ago. Like, this is not a tradition. This is just like a sick, weird, like,
yeah, yeah, tradition. And the much older sister, one of the girls, showed up. She's like, oh, you're still giving Billy a present?
Yeah.
It's like, what's happening right now?
It was 30 years. Like, this is not long enough for it to be, like, some sort of weird legend. Like, that's in bad taste. Like,
yeah, the guy is still in the mental hospital.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They could have, like, at least sent the gift to the mental institution where he was. Like, they could have been like, hey, look, you were abused and you saw some screwed up stuff as a child. We live in your house. Yeah,
because
like,
they do it as...
actually do something nice.
It's not to give him a gift. They say it's a a superstition thing. It's to ward off his spirit from coming to them. As if to imply that the fact that that Mary Elizabeth Winstead did not buy the gift this year is the reason that all this happens. But he's alive.
Yeah.
And he's in a sanitarium or whatever. Like, it's not... his spirit hasn't come to them. There's nothing supernatural happening.
And I don't think he had visitation, so I don't know how his daughter sister also, like, hive-minded this was the year he was going to escape.
Yeah, yeah, because apparently he tries to escape every Christmas.
Year? Yeah.
And then she's just, like, waiting. She's just, like, living in the attic, I guess.
Yeah.
But then, or living in the walls. But then she starts killing before he escapes.
Yeah.
So how did she know that year... he was going to escape.
Incest hive mind.
It doesn't make any sense. It's super weird.
The fact that he's, like, yellow.
Yeah, the... yeah.
And, like...
Because I think it's supposed to be jaundice, but he's just, like... like, bright yellow.
Yeah. He's a yellow man.
It's really weird. The... So some of the backstory for Billy was what the original writer-director... intend, like, had in his mind as the backstory for Billy in the first one. He just didn't put any of it in the film.
Of course.
So he was friends with the guy who made the first remake. And then that guy was like, oh, I'm going to use his ideas for the backstory and, like, actually incorporate it. And then he hated it so much. Or I think it was just that it didn't do well.
Yeah.
Or there was a lot of weird stuff about the 2006 remake where a lot of stuff got added that the director and the writers didn't want in it, and it was because of the Weinsteins.
Right.
That they kept insisting on making it more gory and adding weird shit to it. So a lot of the weirdness of that 2006 one actually comes from the Weinsteins. But then the guy who made the original film was so kind of annoyed by the situation that he decided he was going to make a sequel to the original after the remake was made.
Yeah.
But then he died.
Jesus.
So he didn't do it. So that's a whole thing.
Yeah, because, like, the motivation of the killer in the first one is sort of lost. The motivation of the killer in the third one is also lost. But, like, the motivation of the killer in the second one, in the 06 one, is kind of not justified, but, like, you know, kind of relevant.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, like, very, very strange. And the phone call thing that links all three of these, like, well, it's not phone calls in the third one, it's just, like, WhatsApp messages. It's just so weird that you'd, like, if you're, like, stalking people who are stuck in a house, letting them know you're coming, and then, like, also in the weirdest way possible, because it does seem like it's prank calls, but, like, creepy prank calls that go on for way too long.
I think, if you think about the fact that the director of the original had in mind that Billy had this backstory of abuse.
Yeah.
You can see that this is someone who has suffered a lot of abuse and his mind is, like, broken.
Yeah.
And that's why he's having these episodes where he's reliving his trauma over the phone and he's doing, like, the voices of his mother and his sister or whatever. But it is weird that he's just, like, calling them. And I think that someone theorizes at some point that he calls right after he makes a kill every time. I don't know if that's actually... if that actually adds up or not.
I would say we would find that out the next time we watch this movie, but I don't think I want to watch it.
I certainly don't want to watch it again.
There's been a difference between most of the episodes we've done and this episode, and so I don't want to watch these movies again.
Oh, I was looking up the...
Oh, the boy's on the couch, I can see him, sorry.
I was looking up the original director, Bob Clark, because I thought I had read that he was, that he had died in a car crash, and that's correct, he had died in a car crash, but I didn't realize his son was killed in the crash with him as well.
Oh, that's sad.
That's very, very sad. So he was 67, his son was 22. Here's a fun fact about the guy who made Black Christmas. I can't remember, did he write and I think he wrote and directed it?
Bob Clark. It was written by
Roy Moore.
Yeah, yeah.
So he produced and directed it. The other film that he's probably best known for, which he did write and direct, is A Christmas Story.
Okay.
Which was like 6 years oh no, like 9 years later.
And Porky's, which is weird, but okay.
So I love that he made this movie, and then he went on to make A Christmas Story, which is known as, like, a very classic Christmas film at this point. It's like, oh, okay. These are your two big Christmas movies.
What the hell is Super Babies? Sorry, I'm just going through a slide.
I don't know what Super Babies is. Yeah, these movies are weird.
Yeah, they really are.
I would say I probably do recommend watching the first one. Because I think it's, like, as far as I'm aware, this is our first time watching it, but it was one I've heard of.
Yeah.
I think it is, like, a cult classic, and it is, like, one of the very first slasher films.
Yeah.
And a lot of horror tropes come from this. For example, This isn't just a trope example. There is a film that only got made because the person who went on to make it was so heavily inspired by this film. And that film is Halloween.
Yeah.
So John Carpenter was so inspired by Black Christmas that he made Halloween, which obviously became such a huge franchise.
Yeah.
But wouldn't have existed without the original Black Christmas being made. So... yeah, I think it is a precursor to a lot of horror films that people know and love. Like, as we already mentioned, it's very clearly referenced in Scream.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those films that, like, people... you probably will have know how parts of it are going to go without ever having seen it before, because... not because it was, like, overdone at the time, but because... it inspired so many other films to do similar things. So I definitely think the first one is worth watching. The second one, no, not so much. I think it's interesting just based on the amount of I mean, we mentioned that there was, like, a big cast. I'll list some names of people who are in this. Michelle Trachtenberg, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Lacey Chabert, Katie Cassidy, Andrea Martin, who was the one who was in the previous one as well. Like, there's some decent names in this movie.
Yeah.
Remember I had said to you that there were some big names, and then as they all popped up, you're like, what the hell? What the heck?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, yep, there they all are, just sitting on couches. The original one, one of the main characters is played by Olivia Hussey, who is, I feel like, still most well-known for playing Juliet in the Zeffirelli Romeo and Juliet in the 60s.
Yeah.
I think she's been in loads of things since, but that is something that, like, her face will be very recognizable to people from if they've ever seen that Romeo and Juliet or seen any, like, clips or images from it. Yeah, because that was, you know, she was kind of the iconic Juliet. Like, I watched that in school.
Yeah, yeah.
I think a lot of people who would have studied Romeo and Juliet, if they watched one in school, it would have been that one. And obviously, Keir Dully, who played Dave in Dave Bowman in 2001: A Space Odyssey, is in it. You had Margot Kidder. Yeah. There's some decent names in those. Well, I think Cary Elwes and Imogen Poots are the only kind of big names in the more recent one.
Yeah, I was trying to. I remember going through when the movie ended and going through the cast.
Yeah.
Because I thought Caleb Earlbut Hart Hardy, whatever his, sorry, I can't pronounce his name.
Eberhardt.
Eberhardt. Yeah. Was the same guy who was in. I can't remember the name of the movie. We saw it ages ago, and I cannot remember what one.
What was it about?
I genuinely don't remember. It was like, he looks so familiar, it's bugging me. But he doesn't even have a profile on Landon. Doesn't even have a profile on the Wikipedia page I'm looking at now.
Oh, he's on IMDb.
Yeah.
But I don't know. He was in Judas and the Black Messiah, so that's something we've seen him in.
Yeah, that must be it.
Yeah, that'd be something that you've at least have seen his face in. I think that's the only thing on here, really, that I would even potentially know him from. Yeah. Maybe. sweet. Do we want to get on to trivia already, or is there more you want to say about these movies?
I think that these are a very interesting attempt to sort of bridge that November. Because November is a weird month. Because in October, as movie people, I'm assuming you're a movie person, listener, because you're here listening to a podcast about two movies on the same plot or premise. It's very interesting because, like, October, you're like, yeah, let's watch horror movies. What movies haven't we seen? What movie have we seen? What's a classic? For us, me and Lisa, we have like a ritual every year since I think we've been living together. We've watched Home Alone, Home Alone 2, Jungle All the Way. During actual Christmas period, when we do get time off together, we will be watching Lord of the Rings Extended Edition in a row in singular day. It's a great time to sort of like have that sort of, I don't know, it's almost like a ritual for us now.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where last year I made food equal to what we were watching on screen.
Yeah, it was great.
A lot of bread was consumed that day. I made fresh focaccia. Because Lamnus bread, actual Lamnus bread, because there are people who make recipes for it.
Yeah, it's basically hard tack.
Yeah, it's basically hard tack.
We're like, we'll take some liberties.
Yeah, yeah. And it's very difficult to find movies that sort of feel like Christmas, but also feel like Halloween, that isn't Nightmare Before Christmas.
Hmm.
Or like
Gremlins.
Gremlins, yeah. Which is a movie I could talk about for hours, which we have.
Yeah, and we did it as a Halloween episode, even though it's set at Christmas.
It's set at Christmas, yeah. Like, as we roll into December the end of the year, end of a weird 5 years. I think it's nice to sit back and watch sort of like a nice November movie, even though this episode is a December episode.
And we have watched them in December.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
but you know what I mean, though, right? Because there is that weird sort of like, what do you watch now? And it's like, we saw Pike River last month. Which, if you don't know what that is about, it was a made in New Zealand about a tragedy that happened in New Zealand that's still unfortunately ongoing.
Yeah, which I didn't actually realize. That made me very sad.
Yeah, it's still an ongoing issue.
You get to the end, you know, when you get to the end of a based on a true story movie and you see like the like, and this is how it all wrapped up, and then it's like, and this is what's still happening. Yeah, it's
ongoing. It happened 20 years ago.
That's free. It wasn't 20 years ago. Was it?
Was it? Was
it 20 years ago?
Yeah, I think it happened in 2005.
I think it was 2015. Or 2010? Now I don't know. I think it was 15 years ago. I think it was 2010.
No, you're right. It was 2010. It was November 2010. So it was the 15-year anniversary.
Yeah, 15-year anniversary.
Sorry, and I'm getting confused because Fat Freddy's Drop was the 20th anniversary.
Oh, yes. Yeah. True.
Shout out. Yeah, shout out to Fat Freddy's Drop. World famous in New Zealand.
20 years Lemon of Empire based Rock. On a true story. Anyway.
What else did we see at the movies last month? We watched something else.
We went to see The Running Man, which we did for the podcast. Yeah.
And also One Battle After Another.
Oh, yeah, One Battle After Another.
Which I then told a bunch of people at work about, and they went and watched it.
Well, I suggested we go watch it because a bunch of people at work told me about it.
Yeah.
this is how it happens.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we hadn't been to the movies in a long time, and there's a couple more films I want to see in cinema. I was sending you texts with movies I want to see.
Yeah, because we missed out on 28 Years Later.
Yeah.
I wasn't so super interested in watching the animated Lord of the Rings movie.
Yeah, well, it would have been cool to see the War of the Rohirrim.
Yeah. And, you know, if you don't want to see it, I will go to the third Avatar movie by myself, which will be the second time ever I've seen a movie by myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
The only other movie I've ever seen by myself, like, decided on the day I'm buying a ticket and going to the movie theater by myself was Rogue One.
I've seen dozens of movies by myself.
And that's why we're in a relationship, so you have someone to go to the movies with.
I've seen movies by myself while we've been together. I saw Happiest Season in cinema by myself while you were at work. Whatever year that came out.
Yeah.
A few years back. Which I have since made you watch it at least once. Because yep. I really enjoyed that movie. Yeah, I love going to cinema. I've definitely seen, because I volunteered at the film festival one year while we were together as well, and I saw a lot of movies without you during that. But then I also saved up tickets to watch some with you during that. And those were fun.
Loop Track was fantastic.
Yeah, Loop Track is fantastic. Yeah. Another great New Zealand movie. Anyway.
Yeah. Let's get into the trivia.
That is a horror movie, though. Yeah. If you're a horror movie fan, I do recommend Loop Track. It's not the first time we've recommended it on this podcast.
And Dead as well.
Yeah. Dead, I think we might be going to do on the podcast at some point.
It's interesting, because I thought we didn't do miniseries, Lisa.
Oh, so Dead was a weird one, because they released it as a film, and then they released it as a miniseries, I think?
Yeah.
We'll have to think on that.
Well,
Whether it counts as.
There's two spoilers. There is going to be an It episode at some point, because there are two It movies.
Yeah.
And the miniseries. And I feel like it's fair to do, like, two episodes on that.
But we were going to compare it to something else.
Yeah, but we'll also...
I'm not going to spoil that because it's a fun episode.
But I'm saying that at one point in time, we will be doing it as a remake thing. I assume so.
Like I said
earlier, folks, share with us with your friends because we will keep making episodes while you keep listening to it. If there's one person left listening to it other than our direct family, we'll keep making this show.
And none of our family are in the Netherlands, so there's definitely someone there listening. Unless it turns out that it was just that, like, did my parents go to the Netherlands?
No, they wouldn't have made it to top five.
They just went to the Netherlands and just, like, listened to us on repeat.
Yeah, your entire family.
My parents might have gone to the Netherlands. That would be sad if that's just what it is. It turns out it was just that my parents listened to it.
Just your mum listening to our podcast on repeat.
Just like she was on holiday, so she saved up a bunch of episodes. I don't know. She could tell me.
Yeah.
And mum, if you're going to do that, go to Antarctica. Yeah.
It's only 60,000 New Zealand dollars per person.
Just someone.
It's only like 30,000 euro. Listen
to us in Antarctica.
And you have to get to Chile or whatever.
Oh, you can go from New Zealand.
I thought the one we were looking at went from Chile.
No, the $60,000 one goes from New Zealand.
It goes from Christchurch, doesn't it?
Yeah. Or Dunedin, maybe? One or the other. Somewhere on the South Island. There's also some that go from Tasmania, I think? Or maybe Adelaide? I don't know. But then, the ones that most people outside of this part of the world go from are from Argentina, I think. Or Chile. Yeah. I think Argentina.
It's somewhere in South America.
Anyway, we'll get on to some trivia.
Let's talk about the movies for a bit.
All right. So in 1986, Olivia Hussey, who've already talked about because she was in Romeo and Juliet and she was in the first Black Christmas, she met with the producers for Roxanne, right, which is a film that was released in 1987, because they were interested in casting her for the role of Roxanne. Steve Martin met with her and he said to her, "Oh my God, you were in one of my all-time favorite films." And she was really surprised to find out that he was talking about this film and that he claimed to have seen it 27 times. So one of Steve Martin's all-time favorite films is Black Christmas. This is some weird art imitates or life imitates art kind of situation.
Right. So
Black Christmas, the 1974 film, was scheduled to make a television debut in January 1978 under the title Stranger in the House, I guess because they were doing it after Christmas. I don't know. It's weird when people put things on TV under a different name, but it happens. But they had to reschedule it and broadcast it in May instead because it was scheduled for January 28th, 1978. And on January 15th, 1978, two female students were murdered by someone who had broken into the sorority house they lived in.
Oh, wow.
And three other women in the same area were attacked and assaulted. So the local authorities asked them to pull the film. The network gave them the local TV affiliates an alternative movie to show instead. And then broadcasted it in late May.
Yeah.
The person who committed those crimes was later identified as Ted Bundy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's terrifying. Imagine you go to release your movie about a killer breaking into a sorority house and killing girls, and then when you're about to, like a week before you're, or 2 weeks before you're due to release it, a serial killer breaks into a sorority house and starts killing girls. Horrible. Yeah, I mentioned this, that it's regarded as one of the first ever slasher films and it inspired Halloween. The sorority house that was in the film was an actual house that they rented for the production.
Yeah.
And they had to rewrite some of the scenes in the script to accommodate the way the house was actually structured.
Right.
And it's still a popular tourist attraction to this date.
That's funny.
And also, it had, when they rented it initially, it had old wallpaper and chip paint. So the production designers had to repaint every wall and replace the wallpaper.
Yep.
And it was picked mainly because Bob Clark really liked the staircase in it.
Yep.
He thought it was ominous and he liked that you could have the person on the phone and see someone's feet coming down the stairs without being able to see who it was. So you didn't know, is it the killer or is it someone coming down? So I thought that was cool that, like, this house was chosen specifically for this one element that would work really well with the concept of the movie. And then this is as I mentioned, although the audience never finds out anything about the killer, or even if his name really is Billy, even though he calls it, he identifies himself as Billy on the phone. Bob Clark had written out a backstory for him. He was abused as a child and eventually killed his parents. He has a little sister named Agnes. He tried to kill her, but she escaped, leading Billy to dislike girls.
Right.
And that was then incorporated but changed a little bit for the 2006 one. The 2006 movie, as I mentioned, after the film had a, you know, critical and financial failure, Bob Clark started working on a sequel to the original with himself as director, and he had actually gotten Olivia Hussey to agree to reprise her role, and also John Saxon, who played the Lieutenant Fuller.
Yeah.
And it was going to be that Jess, Olivia Hussey's character, was going to be the new house mother of a sorority house, and then unfortunately Bob Clark passed away, and it never happened. In the 2006 one, all of the female actors or the actresses did their own stunts, which I thought was cool.
That's cool.
Glenn Morgan reportedly clashed a lot with Harvey and Bob Weinstein because of their insistence that the film be more gory, which he didn't approve of. One of the things that they forced him to shoehorn into the script or into the film that wasn't in the script was Billy making cookies out of his mother's flesh.
Yeah, that whole sequence was super weird.
Yeah. Glenn Morgan disowned the film. Someone asked, was he happy with the end results of the film? He said, no way, and it's schizophrenic because Bob Weinstein came in and urinated on it. Really, there was a time where torture porn was the hot thing. You know, I became friends with Bob Clark. You can throw that movie into one of your first questions. I love that movie, and also A Christmas Story, and I learned a lot from Bob and had his blessing that we were trying to make a version that he didn't get to deal with the background of the killers and stuff like that. When Bob Weinstein came in and saw that, he was like, we need to drag Michelle Trachtenberg down the hall by her eyes. And I was like, oh, Lord. And I talked to my agent and lawyer and Kristen Cloak about it. It was humiliating. It was horrible. I stayed to try and protect the cast and crew, friends of mine, and ended up taking it on the chin. So that's fun.
That is fun.
The 2019 one, the guy... Mark Nielsen, who plays Gil, the campus security guard,
yeah,
was actually just a security guard at the campus where the film was shot.
That's funny.
And it was his idea that he'd be eating a sandwich during the scene when he's talking to Riley.
Mm.
But it was the director's idea that he have a mustache. I don't know why she decided to actually he should have a mustache. This is the first Black Christmas movie not filmed in Canada. Instead, as we mentioned, production was set in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And... this is a weird one, but the cat that was originally meant to play Claudette, who was obviously named Claudette because the cat in the first one was named Claude, that's a fun nod,
yeah.
But the cat that was meant to play Claudette dropped out of filming because its trainer's owner, or sorry, its trainer's mother fell ill. And then because of that, they just borrowed an untrained house cat, which was apparently very difficult to work with. Which is just such a weird bit of trivia, but I just thought that was funny. Budgets and box office. So the original film was made for $620,000, yeah, and it made $4 million.
Yeah.
The 2006 one was made for $9 million, and the budget was $9 million. The box office was $21.5 million. So I feel like that's actually not too bad, considering they were calling it like a financial failure.
Yeah.
It could have been worse. And the, speaking of could have been worse, the 2019 one, the budget was $5 million and a box office made $18 million. So none of them were, like, flops. Yeah. The first one was obviously the most successful, but even at that, like, I think it's had so much more longevity than they would have expected when they made it initially, regardless of the financial outcome.
So, 6, 19... that means there was, what, 10, my math is terrible today.
Sorry.
13
You're
years.
Just saying some words. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so.
You're like 6, 19, I was like, none of those are in the budgets.
So, 13 years in between them, and then there was almost 28 years between the first and the second, no?
32,
sorry, yep. Yeah, I was going the wrong way.
You did the 30 and then you subtracted instead of adding. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
32 years between the first and the second and then 13.
So that means, by that logic, the next one will be...
it would have been...
will be next year, maybe?
7 years after, yeah, next year.
Yeah, next year, and then it'll be 3.5 years later, and then...
and then it'll be like...
yeah, then every movie will just become a remake of
we just
Black
keep
Christmas.
The
next remake of human
Black
race
Christmas
collapses.
Is just coming closer every year.
Everybody's in a Black Christmas.
Yeah.
Everybody, because, you know, they've run out of actors.
Yeah.
So just pull random people off the street and stab them with unicorns and...
yeah, I think that was like one of the only elements that was in all three was the glass unicorn that appeared in all three movies.
I've said what I needed to say. Please share this with friends. Go on our website, join our Discord, follow us on social media. You know those normal things that you say at the end of a podcast.
Yeah.
Or some people do them in the middle, which makes way more sense because then you have to listen to the rest of us talking.
We did mention it in the middle.
Yes, indeed. Thank you again to our listeners, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.